Hello guys, it's Rodders here. Now I've just landed on Audio Boo, so thank you very much for listening to my first ever boo. Is it a day boo, maybe? Probably won't use that one again. But I've here to share with you my Idle Talk Philosophy Podcast. It's an accessible and hopefully fun philosophy show that covers everything from medical ethics to metaphysics to moral philosophy and everything in between. So there should be something for everyone on this show. So just give it a few minutes, have a listen to some of it, and I'm going to present to you now a best of Idle Talk show so far, which will give you a nice broad overview of what the show is and what we do. Thanks. Hope you enjoy.
Martin Heidegger claimed that Idle Talk is something that anyone can take up, which releases one from the task of genuinely understanding. He wrote of public disclosedness, of being with one another, where the loudest idle talk and the most ingenious curiosity keeps things moving. Where, in an everyday manner, everything, and at bottom nothing, is happening. We have a different view. We believe that the only way to reach the truth is by talking. Like a man panning for gold in a dung heap, in amongst the blither blather, bad puns and nonsense, one might find a single grain of truth. This is Idle Talk. Open your mind and then your mouth.
Good evening. This is Idle Talk, the best of so far. A time where, I get to sit back, rest on my laurels, and take account of what this show has done thus far, whether it's really doing what I set out to do in the first place, and we get to relive some of the most mind-boggling moments of the show. If you've never listened to Idle Talk before, Idle Talk is a philosophy show. Don't get put off by that philosophy. Three-syllable word, it's really not that complicated. Well, it can be. Idle Talk just wants to... The aim of this show... When I first started doing this, I graduated from university last July, and I did philosophy at the University of Reading. I had a wonderful, wonderful 3 years, and I thought, I really don't want to give this up. I mean, I never ever want to do an exam or write an essay ever again, but I really love the arguing, the reading, and all that sort of thing. So I thought, just because I've graduated doesn't mean... It's like one of my friends was, my friend said, this might sound sad, but I'm going to miss her. Learning stuff and going to lectures. Well, it doesn't have to stop. So this is my philosophical avenue. Philosophy, I like to define... Well, that's a contentious thing, to define philosophy. People have been struggling with that for years. But I like to describe it as an insatiable curiosity. Philosophy is simply asking the broadest of questions, such as, what happens when I die? What is the meaning of life? Would it really matter if I just didn't get out of bed tomorrow? Those broad abstract things about our existence. Is the external world real? If my senses can be fooled by conjuring tricks and stuff like that, then what reason do I believe to have... Do I have to believe that the world is real? How do I know I'm not dreaming? That's a philosophical question. And then there's the far less abstract. There's ethics. If somebody is suffering from a terminal disease and there's no hope of them recovering and it's just their life is living misery, do they have the right to ask doctors to kill them? Should euthanasia be allowed? Also, the moral questions boil down to everyday things like, was it morally wrong of me not to bother to pay my friend back for petrol money when he gave me a lift halfway across the country? I simply didn't bother to pay him, even though I promised I would. Is that morally wrong? Should I feel guilty? Why do we feel guilt? What is guilt? These are all philosophical questions, and whether you like it or not, via just because of us being human, we all do philosophy. Every day, by mistake, we ask questions. Of course, we're not doing it academically. We're not doing it with any real precision or clarity. That's why we turn to philosophers, who basically they've made it their life to read and study the thoughts of others and formulate their own studies and just try and make sense of life. Because it's a very weird thing, isn't it? life. This human race just seems to be thrown out, chucked onto this little rock. Then... We've got no instruction manual. Well, some would argue the Bible's a pretty good instruction manual, but that's blooming hard to interpret. That needed many translations. And we've got to work everything out from first principles. Like the ancient Greeks, Plato and Aristotle started from absolutely nothing. Aristotle wandered around Greece, picking up different animals and categorizing them. The father of biology. We owe a huge debt to the ancient Greeks such as Plato and Aristotle. Hence, to remind me of this, in my studio here, on my desk is a bust of Plato, which actually from Greece. It's a cheap thing from a tourist shop that a friend bought me. But it's really funny. Apparently, when they bought it, they said it's a shame. Rodders isn't doing medicine because I've got hundreds and hundreds of statues of Hippocrates that I just can't get rid of. But Plato seems to be very much in demand in the Greek souvenir shops. So tonight I'm going to play you extracts from the past couple of months on Idle Talk. We've done a fair... This show has sort of developed. It's changed. It's done all sorts of things. It's a very weird thing. It's not anything like it. If you listen back to the first ever episode, it was 2 hours long, had no real structure. And 23 episodes later, it's all rather different. We have a structure, we cut it to an hour. A lot of people rebelled and said that's a really bad thing to do, but I'm always of the opinion that you should leave them wanting more. And let's face it, doing 2 hours on philosophy, hard on the listener, even harder on me, who's got to do all the reading and the work for it. I swear sometimes I'm doing more reading for these talk shows that I do for fun, supposedly, than I actually did when I was writing essays at university. It's a strange situation we find ourselves in. So let's, without any more prevarication, let's get into our first best bit. One of the first episodes we did was about success. People define ourselves. Espy says, I too have 100 100 figurines of Hippocrates that I'm trying to get rid of. Yeah, I know. It's a pain, isn't it? But let's get back into our first best bit clip. Back on the 22nd of January, February, March, April, May, June. Yeah, back last... Wow, this was last, last summer, apparently. We talked about success. People worry about success. Being successful is a very... It's a very strange thing. We really want to be successful. But what is success? Everyone seems to define success differently. Some people define it by money. Some people define it by setting particular goals. So let's listen to this clip where we discuss what is success.
The best of Idle Talk.
But you said, right, I want to live up to people's ideas. So what is success?
The thrill for me is actually achieving things that I know I've wanted to achieve. So if I do a piece of work for someone that I like, or, if I get somewhere that I've wanted to get to, that means more to me than the amount of money that I'll actually get out of it, which is completely wrong. I should be thinking about the money side of it the whole time, I guess. But this, I can't say his name, Elaine de...
Botton, yeah.
Botton. Was saying, what was he saying, about materialism and how people have pegged emotional rewards to material goods. So if they've got a Porsche and they're driving around, it represents to everybody else how it's not about having the Porsche themselves. They haven't always wanted a Porsche and they don't sit and stare at it every night and think, oh, how lovely. They like to drive it around because it represents to people that they've got a lot of money and they've been successful. But you can't really have something to represent how, if you've done a really good illustration for something,
but then you
can't really have a physical thing to show people.
But you know, relative to yourself, if you've done a good job. So
yeah, and that's what I think it should be about. And
I've been struggling.
If you know it in yourself,
I've been struggling with this idea. For me, I really think that I honestly, as long as I'm comfortable and can do the things that I want to do, I love meeting people, I love talking to people, I love doing stand-up, I love doing the radio. Success for me is carrying on doing that. I don't need to be as good as ex-comedian. I don't need to be the next Chris Moyles. Obviously, those are people to aspire to. But if I never, ever get to their plateau of fame, I'm not a failure.
No, like, I think
if people are so harsh in society on people that fail. And like somebody that I was talking to about stand up, he said, "Oh, well, tell me a joke then." I said, "Look, I hate doing this because it's out of context and you're not in a comedy club, but I did. And he said, oh, well, that's not very funny. I said, well, okay, sure. And he said, well, did that get a laugh the last time you performed that at a gig? And I said, no. And he said, well, that probably means you're not a very good comic. I said, well, you've got to fail. I think to be a good stand-up comic, you've got to be prepared to fail. Let's just put just any old number on it. You've got to fail a hell of a lot in order to get one little glimpse at success in stand-up.
8 times a day, I think it is.
And I'm not going... Like, it's good to have a wild ambition. Like, sure, my ambition is to be, I don't know, the best radio presenter / stand-up personality ever. But then you've got to then temper that ambition with what you can realistically achieve. Like, if I've got a gig on Wednesday night, come along, details on the website, robs.com. Hey, so unsubtle, it's untrue. But it's my show, I can do what I want, okay? But if I go there and I'm not as good as, I don't know, Jimmy Carr, whoever your favourite comedian is, I haven't failed.
He isn't anyone's favourite comedian
if
anymore.
Tax office are loving him. If I go out there and I don't, you know, and I'm a bit better than last week, that's success in a degree. There's few things that make me happy. What makes me happy is being creative in the way of radio and TV and being able to write stuff, being able to have an audience. Those are the things that make me happy. And I honestly don't care. If I never have enough money to go on an expensive holiday, if I never own a car, I do not care. They're not important to me.
I think... that's...
sure, I'll take them if they're offered, but you know what I mean? It's like, it's not my goal.
I do feel like that. That's how I think. As long as I'm happy with where I've reached, then I feel like I'm successful. But at the moment, it seems like people aren't happy to just feel successful in themselves. They have to have other people think they're successful. So they'll go on Facebook and they'll say, today I did a commission for so-and-so, or, oh, I've got so much work on at the moment, it's so stressful.
Oh, well, the struggle is with this podcast being a public thing, I'm constantly seeking other people's approval. And honestly, if I get more downloads this week than next week, if on Monday morning I open up my laptop and I've got 100 new downloads, I'm in a good mood for the rest of the day.
But that's different. That's an indication of how well your show has done. But people feel the need to tell other people that they've done it, and that's why people need to have the materialistic goods. They have to be driving around the Porsche so they don't have to go around shouting to everyone, I'm a successful businessman, I've got so many clients and I've done this. That's just their way of showing it, just like going on Facebook and telling everybody else, you know, I got so many listeners for my show tonight.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far, because it would be quite a modest number.
But that's the equivalent.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is self-justifying. And luckily, I've got very supportive friends and family, but I could imagine a world where people regard what I'm doing as an utter waste of time. I mean, I'm not making a big difference in the world, really.
But if you say things like that, you eliminate whole groups of people. If you eliminate the people disrespect me for...
Sorry.
People diss me because I have got a job in the arts in it, and you has got a job on the radio. But people think that that's not valid. But you need things like that. People need to laugh, and people need to look at nice things. It's all part of what makes life interesting, isn't it?
Idle Talk on One Radio.
Successful. Oh, look at those clothes.
See, we hate it when our friends become successful, isn't that right? On wonderradio.org, you are listening to the best of Idle Talk so far. We're not stopping the show. Admittedly, this is a bit of a cop-out. Whenever someone does a clip show, it is always a cop-out. It's because they haven't bothered to prepare a proper show. What are you going to do, guys? Don't sue me, please. You wouldn't have really a legal leg to stand on. So, I'm debating in the chat room. Is there any point Idle Talk having a webcam? Because I felt, well, when I did a show called Thank Rod It's Friday, which was a personality-driven comedy-style talk show where I'd go off on one, I'd do stupid features. So it made sense. We play games, we play I Spy on the webcam, and it seemed to give an extra visual element. And I've always been sort of quite keen on visualising my radio show. But I have no idea, does the same thing work with Idle Talk? Because it's more factual. It's, let's face it, the most serious show I've ever done, content-wise. Even, and I don't know, I did have a webcam on it for quite a while. But then, I think it's just used to ogle co-hosts, to be honest. I don't think it's ever really has any real benefit to the show. But what do you think of that? Also, what do you think about the show so far? Give me your honest opinion, because, you know, we need your help to sort this thing out. This has just been a massive experiment, because I've never, ever done a show like this. I basically did sort of breakfast-style comedy formats and the occasional talk show for the past 5 years or so. So I'd like to... what do you think of the show? Because the thing I find admittedly difficult about the show is that I'm pitching it at two sort of audiences. Though I want it to be accessible so people who haven't studied philosophy at university or haven't even been to university can engage with it and find it interesting. But at the same time, I need to keep it sort of in-depth enough to hold the attention of people who are at university, because I've been doing some joint ventures with the Reading University Philosophy Society. We've had some of their members and some of the academics associated with that club on here, and so I've got to, and they seem like an ideal audience, because they're students, they're young, they're trendy and cool, man, and they're intelligent, and they're exactly the sort of people I want listening to the show. But at the same time, I want to bring philosophy to the masses, so to speak, to people who haven't really done it. So do you think, is the show, when you listen to the show, does it, do you just find it too confusing? Do you think it's just, do you think I, because there is a thing with philosophy, you can make it overcomplicated just by using big words. And do you find the show interesting, or do you just hear a load of noise? Do you think I do the opposite and I dumb the topics down too much and don't go into enough depth? I would like your thoughts. If you'd like to Skype me, you could. My Skype name is rodders.com, rhodders.com. Or just write your comments in the shout box at oneradio.org/s. If you haven't made yourself known to me in there, then it's a good time to do so. And the clip we just heard, we talked about trying to define success. Alain de Botton, a rather popular and sort of media-savvy philosopher, published many books, been on telly quite a bit, and he wrote a book called Status Envy, in which you sort of, everyone is after status. Everyone just wants to be loved and wants attention. And it's an interesting one. Basically, we only really envy people that are within our peer group. Like, we don't envy the royal family, even though they're much richer and more, live a much more glamorous lifestyle than we do, because it doesn't seem attainable. They live in sort of a separate universe to us. Whereas if my mate suddenly gets promoted and gets a really good job, and I don't feel that he's in any way different or better than me, I'm going to feel jealous, because I don't think because you don't think it's that you, there's no reason why you think you shouldn't have what he has. And talking about success led us to do a show later about fame, because fame is it's something our whole culture is absolutely obsessed with, and a lot of people judge success by how famous they think they are. So this is myself and Nicola talking about fame. The best
of Idle Talk.
Discussing the book by Payne about fame and celebrity, apparently celebrities, they serve sort of like a sacrificial role in our society. This is one theory that we humans are inherently aggressive. We need celebrities to sort of vent our frustration and just annoyance. So we have something to sort of, it's like a wicker man. You have something to raise up and then you burn it and destroy it. For example, Britney was she was, you know, the whole virgin image, and she was,
everybody loved her. Yeah, I loved her.
She was perfect. She can do anything, and then suddenly she goes, a couple of years down the line, she goes nuts and shaves all her hair off, and yeah. and the press take great delight in vilifying her. Where if you're growing up under the spotlight, everyone does stupid things. I don't know, not justifying adultery or anything ridiculous like that, but everybody does stupid things. Well, it's just some people have to do it in the glare of the public eye. I mean, Brittany, I sympathise with, because she had fame to a degree thrust upon her. She was brought up to be famous, basically. She was in the Mickey Mouse Club when she was tiny with Justin Timberlake. And so there was never a conscious decision where she thought, right, I was going to be famous. That was just sort of the way her life was preordained to be.
Tough enough to stick it out with Kim, but I wasn't tough enough to juggle two things at once. I found myself laying on my knees in cuffs, which should have been a reason enough for me to get my stuff and just leave. How come I couldn't see this shit myself? It's just me. Nobody couldn't see the shit I felt, knowing damn well she wasn't gonna be there when I failed to catch me. The minute shit was heated, she just fell. I'm standing and swinging, only 30 people by myself. I couldn't even see the millimeter when it fell. Turn around, saw Gary stashing a heater in his belt. Saw the pounds. Crush him and beat him to the ground. I just sold 2 million records, I don't need to go to jail. I'm not about to lose my freedom over no female. I need to slow down, try to get my feet on solid ground. So for now,
sing about, sing about Hollywood. 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 Sing about
bury my face in comic books, cause I don't wanna look at nothing.
I'm gonna live forever.
In this world's too much, I swallowed all I could. If I could swallow a bottle with Tylenol, I would. And hit it for good, just say goodbye to Hollywood. I probably should, these problems are piling all at once. Is everything that bothers me, I got it bottled up. I think I'm bottoming out, but I'm not about to give up. I gotta get up, thank God I got a little girl. Now my responsible fathers are not a lot of good. I beat up my daughter laying in the bottom of the in my blood, cause I don't know how I do it. All I know is I don't wanna follow in the footsteps of my dad, cause I hate him so bad. The worst fear that I had was growing up to be like his fucking ass. Man, if you could understand why I am the way that I am, what do I say to my fans when I tell them I'm
sing about Hollywood. 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 Sing about Hollywood.
I don't wanna quit, but shit, I feel like this is it. For me to have this much, I feel like this is sick. This is not a game, this fame. In real life, this is sick. Publicity scarred my ass, conceal my fucking dick. Fuck the guns, I'm done. I'll never look at cats. If I scrap, I'll scrap like I ain't never whipped some ass. I love my fans, but no one ever puts a grasp on the fact I've sacrificed everything I have. I never dreamt I'd get to the level that I'm at. This is whack, this is more than I ever could have. Everywhere I go, a hat, a sweater, hood, a mask. What about math? How come I wasn't ever good at that? It's like the boy in the bubble who never could adapt. I'm trapped. If I could go back, I never would have rapped. I sold my soul to the devil, I'll never get it back. I just wanna leave this game with level head intact. Imagine going from being and knowing to seeing everything blow up, and all you did was just grow up and seeing. It's fucking crazy. Cause all I wanted was to give hatred a life I never had. Instead, I forced us to live alienated, so I'm saying.
Sing about Hollywood. Sing about Hollywood. Sing about Hollywood. Sing about Hollywood. Sing about Hollywood.
Eminem saying goodbye to Hollywood. That song, I think, really epitomises the bittersweet element of fame. Fame doesn't bring you happiness. It only brings other problems.
The best of
Idle Talk.
And in other news, according to a German research institute, Facebook is psychologically damaging. It causes unprecedented feelings of envy on a ridiculous scale. And it is psychologically damaging. Because basically people apparently sit there and they look at how much fun people are having. You see holiday photo after holiday photo. And people are just sitting there passively consuming all these great things. And people are constantly posting, oh, what a great time I'm having. Even if they're not. It's not uncommon for people just to take photos to put on Facebook just to make it look like they're having a good time. I mean, I've done that. I've made sure I got in a photo so it at least looks like I'm having fun. And when I think about it, that's really weird. But we all do crazy things like that to exaggerate our online profile to make us look more sort of acceptable and human. I think this has led to co-host Nicola to really, really hate Facebook.
Facebook makes you jealous, unhappy, and irritable.
Absolutely. All of those three and nothing else. Nothing positive.
Really?
Ever, I don't think. No, it's terrible. I hate it.
Really? Oh my God, are you playing devil's advocate?
No, genuinely.
You hate it so
much. Every time I see that little blue bar, I think, no, that sounds wrong. I'm talking about Facebook here. Every time I see that logo, I think, what am I doing? I just hate myself. I literally feel self-loathing at wasting so much time.
What would you do instead, though? Because, you know, people...
I don't know.
People,
well,
you know, in Victorian times, people would gaze out the window and daydream. Like, I think...
In Victorian times, they used to strap fleas to wagons and make them drag them around.
Oh, God.
Have you got that?
Of course I haven't, but...
Go on, find it. No. We'll just sit in silence while you find that, even though I've just said it exactly the same as it is.
Yeah.
Come on.
Winning.
Not that one.
I honestly can't find it. Hang on. Please.
No, I don't know. I don't know what I'd be doing otherwise. Probably something else, like... People procrastinate, that's natural, so I guess I'd be doing something.
There we go.
In Victorian times, they strapped fleas to small wagons and made them push them along.
There we go, that was worth it.
Without Facebook, what would we do instead? That's the thing I want
to know. I don't know, I think maybe I would be working.
I don't think you would.
I don't think I would.
Because, like, the way when you go to Facebook, I think it's like a natural break where you're going to get distracted anyway. Like, maybe you do.
Maybe.
You know, people used to doodle in the old days. I remember doodling.
That is work for me, though.
Yeah, but I was never commissioned.
Remember doodling? That's my job.
Yeah, freelance doodler extraordinaire. If you want to commission a doodle off Nicola, I'm sure her rates are competitive. She's a special offer on Stickman at the moment.
It's almost worse than people calling them cartoons.
Oh, God.
Stop playing with my levels. What are you doing?
Get over yourself. having technical issues tonight, mainly Nicola. I don't know why we bother. I'm just going to unplug.
I know you have issues with me when I'm talking because I just see you dithering around with those things all the time. Like, oh, she's talking quietly now. Oh, no, she's suddenly got really loud. Just turn her down a bit.
So what do you think about this then? Add me on Skype. My name is Rodders, RHODDERS.com is a Skype name you need. Steve writes in, Steve said, blaming Facebook for people's own faults is like blaming violence on television. It's just an excuse. So you think the problems are there. These feelings of envy we feel.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
So basically, is Facebook just sort of a symptom of the human condition?
Yeah, I think it was only natural that I think Facebook would come out because you had the internet and people socialise, and it's just a way of putting that on a internet platform.
It's all gone a bit mad now, though, isn't it? It's all so vast.
It just magnifies things that would have been an issue anyway.
It exacerbates the human condition. We'll go on to that more in a minute. SB says, there are some users specifically who post a lot of...
Humble brag updates.
I just banished those to the newsfeed. Yeah, that's a good way of doing it.
That's all Facebook is just a platform on which you can boast and make yourself out to be really great. Post pictures of yourself that only look nice and...
Well, you'd be an idiot to put up horrible photos.
Yeah, and don't write horrible things about yourself. Just write nice things and you look like a great person.
But the trouble is, if you write negative things about that, you just look like even more of an attention seeker. Steve says, we are not obliged to keep friends on Facebook who if we don't like those post. Yeah, I think we forget that. I have so many people on my Facebook that I actually loathe, and I don't know why I'm not deleting them.
Yeah, people that I only loathe, that I've never liked, people I've never even known or spoken to, I only loathe them, but I still keep them.
Having a rave in Plato's cave.
This is OneRadio.org, Idle Talk, the best of so far. I like your comments on the show. What other topics would you like me to cover? Because that was a rather practical topic where we all know what Facebook is. So let's now turn to something a little more abstract. Normative ethics. How should we live a good life? What is? How do we know what things are wrong? And a couple of weeks ago, we discussed Kant. This was last week's topic. We discussed Kant and the problem of lying. Kant was a German philosopher, very, very influential. And he was a deontologist, which means he is concerned with the actions themselves rather than the outcome. What makes an action right or wrong is not the outcome. It's not that stealing can be right if it has a good outcome, maybe if it stops a child from starving. The action of stealing is always wrong. So it's actions rather than... the outcomes are irrelevant, and you can find out, according to Kant, what actions are genuinely good in reality by just appealing to reason. We started the show with a really strange example of, say there is a murderer coming to your house. This is known as Kant and the problem of lying. A murderer comes to your house, wants to murder your best friend, who's hiding in the cupboard. The murderer goes, "Where's your friend?" And you can't say, "I don't know," because that would be lying. Lying, according to Kant, would be always wrong. Even though our gut reaction is, well, even if lying is wrong, then it's the lesser of two evils. Or you might even argue from a consequentialist point of view, which means you judge something as right or wrong depending on its outcome. You'd say that is actually lying is the right thing to do because it leads to the right outcome. So let's find out exactly what Kant would have made of this situation.
The best of
Idle Talk.
Let's go to what Kant would think specifically of this example. He would say you are morally obliged to tell the truth, and so be it that your friend gets killed. That may sound absurd, but he's talking in a very broad sense. He's saying how would you formulate a law of that? Because you can see lying is wrong because it's because you can say lying is wrong, people shouldn't lie, and if everybody adheres to that imperative, then things are better, aren't they, really? This isn't why Kant would argue with it, because he just says lying is bad in itself, and you discover that through reason. But look, kind of assess Kant practically.
I can see my... Hello. Yeah, there we go.
You're on,
can...
no worries.
I can see what he's going for, bless him, but... he's trying to assign one law to everything.
Exactly what he's trying. But the truth is, it is very hard. Couldn't have an imperative that was, oh, well, some lying is wrong, but sometimes it's okay. That makes a nonsense. It's like the way the law works, it says murder is wrong, doesn't it? That's the way the law works. Murder is wrong. Murder is not sometimes okay. That's not what the law says.
It says murder is wrong, but it also has a system in place whereby if in extreme circumstances somebody is trying to kill you and you murder them back, they'll kind of go, you know...
But you still couldn't will something like that as a universal law. You couldn't say, well, okay, sometimes it's all right to lie. And also, if you say, if I lie, then it's okay for everyone to lie, and then suddenly the whole institution of trust is undermined.
Okay, yeah, but that's a basic rule. But if you asked anybody involved with the law, is murder always wrong under every circumstances, they'd say no. Surely.
But it's never right, is it?
No, but sometimes it's the lesser of two evils. But what Kant's saying is lying is always wrong under every circumstances.
He also says it's wrong because lying is not treating someone as an end of themselves, but merely as a means. And
which surely also makes no sense.
I think that makes sense.
Sorry, I'm sure he was a great guy. I really hate to disagree with everything he says. I'm sure he had, you know, I'm sure he was lovely.
Nice hair.
I'm sure he had lovely hair.
I'm sure he's bald.
Actually, he had a funny nose. Did I see a picture of him?
And also, there is the argument that if your friend was killed, then it's not your responsibility. It's not really your fault at all. The good or bad results of an action that is owed, like the results of for example, if you do something and something accidentally happens, it's good. you shouldn't be rewarded for that because it wasn't you who did it. And likewise, the results of an action that you couldn't, the results of him being killed, it was just an accident. You didn't kill him.
No, but if someone comes to your door with an axe saying, I would like to murder your friend, please, are they in there? And you have an opportunity to say no and they will nicely leave. You've probably got a bit of a responsibility there.
SB says, but the trouble with this is that it relies on all of us with our own attributes of fairness, so that this relies on some deeper shared sense of ethics, which Rodders can hopefully explain. Yeah, this is the hard thing about Kant. He just says, well, use your reason. Trouble is, people aren't very good at being... Even if Kant is correct, it's very, very difficult because, essentially... But this isn't really an argument against Kant. Because just because we're crap at using reason doesn't mean it's not the way to...
Well, he doesn't think we should use reason, does he? He just thinks we should use his reason, which is no.
No, Kant says use reason, and any reasonable person can attain and follow the categorical imperative just by using their reason. It's like a sort of an a priori bit of knowledge that's in your brain. Like, you can just figure it out by doing something sensible. So that's what Kant's reckoning. So just because people are rubbish... But see, this is a really hard thing. Kant just seems to... sort of base all his arguments on everything being the same. So SB is saying that... I don't know, but... Oh, SB, don't use the word fairness. That makes things very complicated. He says, the trouble is that relies upon all of us and our own attributes of fairness. But yeah, I see what he's saying. I think he's saying that it all relies on us being able to access this reason, this categorical imperative. But then Kant would just say, well, you're just doing it wrong, aren't you? You're doing reason wrong. But then, is there really... What if you argue the other way and saying there isn't this reason, there isn't this greatest good that we all can attain to? There's just sort of stuff going on. It does seem to be relying on something rather big and outside this world, isn't it?
I don't think you can really say that lying in any sense is treating a person as a means rather than an end, like he says.
Going back to this thing of saying, well, it's not really your fault if your friend gets murdered. When Kant says the harm was an accident, he does not mean that it couldn't have been foreseen. Rather, he just said it's an unintended byproduct of one's actions. By contrast, if someone lies in an effort to save the victim and the lie happens to have a bad consequence, one is responsible for those consequences, even if they were neither foreseen or intended.
I don't... That's ridiculous, though, because you know that it's going to happen. I know, like, if you're in a really difficult situation and, you know, you're only human, sometimes you have to just tell the truth and you wouldn't be blamed for it. But in this example, anything like this, where you know so clearly what's going to happen and all you have to do is lie and you're out of it and it's fine.
I think in the most general of terms, Kant's thing makes sense. Like, it seems nice that we only give to charity because of duty for duty's sake, because it's the right thing to do.
But that doesn't happen in the real world.
But that's what I'm saying. In the broadest of terms, it is, like, you can say in the broadest of terms that it's the lying is wrong, because in general it's a very bad thing, and you couldn't ever will that lying was okay.
The best of Idle Talk.
So, a discussion about Kant. It sparked off controversy in the chat box. Chris, she says that, so if I went back in time and murdered Hitler, it would be wrong. According to Kant, because you could never will that, what would the law be? When it suits me, I could murder people. You couldn't ever will that to be a universal law. And also, you're using Hitler as you're treating him as a, not as an end in himself, but as a means. So that's why... And it doesn't matter how many people killing Hitler would save, because Kant isn't interested in outcomes. That would be incidental. He's interested in actions. Kant believes actions are intrinsically wrong or intrinsically good. And you have to be able to make big general laws about them. So that's what he'd argue. But, of course, you all want to disagree with that, but... It's very hard to get out of the mindset of a consequentialist, because what you propose there, but what if by murdering someone you'd save a lot of people? Chris, what you did there, you were being a consequentialist. You would basically
doing the whole thing of the ends justify the means, which seems sensible, but it isn't always the case. I think means are important. I had this argument with James Kirkpatrick, one of my friends who's now off to... he's at St. Andrews doing a master's in philosophy. And I said, why isn't it... Surely consequences are the only thing that matters. He said, well, what about this? What if you had a dictator who wanted to cause as much suffering on his people as possible, but by mistake from incompetence actually brought around something really, really good, and they all flourished and they had a great time, but his intention was to do something wrong, but he accidentally helped everyone. I can't think of a more concrete example of that, but it got me thinking, well, yeah, intentions do matter. Maybe not to the extent that Kant is a very extreme case. And to be totally consequentialist is very extreme. I think you need to have a balance. I think it would be strange to only concentrate on consequences, because otherwise you can justify all sorts of things. Like, you could look at it the other way around. What if killing 1,000 people would save 1,500 people? You're still benefiting more people than you're harming, so that's okay. Well, no, surely there's an argument to put forward that killing is always wrong. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. Maybe we'll revisit that one at a later date. But on the subject of lies, here's the great philosopher, Professor Fleetwood Mac, with his paper entitled Little Lies. Fleetwood Mac lies on oneradio.org. During the episode of Cant, we, well, it was quite a heavy topic, and I think we might revisit it. But always, you can always call in, and you're invited to jump into the debate. And some shows, we get quite a lot of callers. And we had a caller during the Cant episode called Siobhan, and she phoned up and dragged us off on a rather amusing tangent involving a story where she lied.
The best of
Idle Talk.
Siobhan, you're on the show. Evening. Good evening.
Hello.
You all right? Well, what's your thoughts on Cant and lying?
Well, I have a good story where I lied once and it really didn't help me out in the long run.
Right.
It's not very philosophical, though.
It's not very philosophical. Well, let's go off on a tangent then, all right. Can we put a Kantian message into this?
Maybe you can crowbar one in.
Okay, let's crowbar and tangent. What happened, Siobhan?
Well, this is one of the first times, because I don't like lying, so this is one of the first times that a little white lie just embarrassed me in the long run. When I was in year eight, a load of girls were talking about who had kissed a boy, and everyone asked me if I had, and I was like, yeah, I've done that. And then the thing is, I thought, like, oh, well, no one will pick me up on this, because I hadn't. And then loads of girls came running over and were like, oh my God, I can't believe you've kissed a boy, you're the only one that's done it. And I was like, oh no, that's not worked. So I said, oh no, I was just saying it because I thought everyone else had. And then that made me look silly.
Oh, God.
So I would say the rule of thumb for Siobhanian philosophy is if you're going to lie, keep the lie going. You can't go back on your lie because it just goes into even more trouble.
But let's examine that from a moral perspective. Kant would say that is wrong. It's a weird one, because really that lie didn't harm anyone but you. But it was wrong in the sense that you were deceiving. It was wrong in the sense that you couldn't will that as a universal... Actually, what if you willed this as a universal law? That whenever someone was asked whether they had been kissed by someone, they said yes. What would happen then?
I don't know, it could, it depends who it is.
It could break up a few marriages, I imagine.
Yeah. We had, actually, at school, when I did philosophy of religion, we did Kant and lying, and they always used a really weird example of, if the example they used to explain his philosophy was, if a masked gunman comes running into the classroom and asks where the teacher is, and all the students know that the teacher is in the photocopying room, you have to, by Kant's philosophy, this is what the teacher said anyway, tell them that the teacher is in the photocopying room. Because otherwise, if you lie to him, that's just wrong. It doesn't matter about the consequences afterwards.
Yeah,
it was a really weird example to be using.
Especially, yeah. That's a bad idea, because most people hate their teachers, and most teachers in my experience haven't been... I would happily have sent the gunman into the photocopier room in most of my lessons, with the exception of a couple of good teachers. That's my feeling.
Idle Talk on One Radio.
The call that was a SB in the shout box titled Siobhan and the Kissing Game. Yeah. No, she wasn't station manager, she was just my producer. But she was, maybe she had a marketing or something. Guys, in the last couple of minutes, I need your help with the show. iTunes reviews are very welcome. But also, maybe, I'm getting the impression a lot of you don't use iTunes. Where else would you like me to post Idle Talk? Because I want to make it as easy for you to listen. Because you seem to be very content to listen live, and I'm not sure a lot of the live listeners bother catching up with the old episodes they've missed on the podcast. Where should I put it online that would make it easier for you to listen? I do need a response to this within the next 2:50, because then I'll be off the air. But thank you very much for being part of the show today. I thought of putting them up on Audioboo, and I'm not sure about Mixcloud. I'm not convinced anyone really uses Mixcloud. You can get many people listening, and also the site seems a bit clunky, but yeah, a lot of people use it. And I'm also torn between SoundCloud as well, because that seems to be a real war now of audio platforms. I'm never going to pull out of iTunes, but I think I need something else as well for the people who to mop up the rest of the people who don't necessarily use iTunes. Podomatic, Martin, is, well, that's just the same as me doing my own podcast. What would be the point in that? I really don't know, because all Podomatic does, it's for people who can't be bothered to sort out their own website and have an RSS feed. I used to be on Podomatic, and I don't think it really got me anywhere. Also, you have to pay quite a lot to get anything worthwhile on Podomatic. Sorry to shoot down your suggestion, but I think Podomatic, quite frankly, is a bit pants. ISP hasn't used iTunes for 7 years. What would you like me to put it on? Up on Mixcloud, maybe, or on Soundcloud, or Audioboo? What do you, let me know quickly in the shout box. Where do you think I should put Idle Talk? And in fact, please message me on Facebook. You've all got me on Facebook. Just go facebook.com/thisisrodders. You can always message me, and I pretty much, you're guaranteed that I'll bother to reply to you, because I'm nice like that, and I think you guys are pretty cool as well. Or tweet me. I just want to know, where do you think I should put Idle Talk online to make it as easy for you to listen as possible? Right. But yeah, no. I have an RSS feed on my. I have an RSS feed on my website, SB. But I'm not convinced anyone really goes to my website anymore. I'm in a bit of a conundrum over the whole thing. So yeah, well, I don't know. Really, I have no idea where I should put it. I'm thinking of putting it on Audioboo, because I want something that can integrate into Facebook and just the player pops up. Because I think once people start listening, they're unlikely to turn it off. It's just getting them to listen in the first place is a difficult one. But thank you very much for listening to a retrospective Idle Talk, Plato's Cave, the past few episodes. It's been a wonderful meander through many turbulent issues. The show will return with another mind-boggling topic. Feel free to tweet me at Rodders, RHODDERS. Should know how to spell that by now, really. And send me suggestions for topics. This is Rodders signing out for Idle Talk on oneradio.org. Thanks very much. And subscribe on iTunes.